Hare Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahavirayankaravavahai Tejasvinavaditamastamavinivishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, so page, no page.
Page 43.
Mine doesn't say anything.
No, mine either, but
43, okay. By inference.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
But don't make it into a philosophy.
Okay. Sri Nityananda Das Babaji. Many Kanista Bhaktas do not progress. What is the reason for this? Sri Haridas Babaji. If the Kanista Bhaktas Dveshi Sangha, association with the inimical agnostics, atheists, impersonalists, etc., is frequent, very soon he loses the Kanista status and becomes entangled in the pursuit of karma and jnana, etc. In some cases, the Kanista neither progresses nor regresses, just remaining at the Kanista level. Right. So by association, you can not advance,
yes.
Right? Or even you've advanced some, you can drop back. Because as we said before, is that the Madhyama could also drop back. It's just a matter of that proper faith, that proper commitment. So in other words, if the faith is fixed, and if the lack of interest in karma and jnana is there, right? That more attachment to associating with advanced devotees, then that situates you on the Madhyama platform. Mm-hmm. Now, somehow the faith drops, the material desires come up, one gives up that good association as one's determination. It can slide back to neophyte. You know, as we see here, it can slide back further. It could either slide back to, you know, it's just you can fall, go from that platform. Basically, it just goes back to Bhakti Sukriti platform, right? That could happen. You know, but generally speaking, we see is that it doesn't. But in any case, even if it does, one doesn't lose the position of devotional service. The devotional service rendered isn't lost, right? Just one's faith is not there, so one's not able to take advantage of it. But the service itself isn't lost, so one won't fall into the animal species, right? Like that, you know, because you don't have to worry about falling in because you're already associating with them,
yeah.
Right? You know, that's the problem, right? You know, so.
Right.
Yes.
Do we distinguish between inimical agnostics and atheists?
Agnostics, atheists, and impersonalists. Inimical agnostic. Well, see, an agnostic, basically, they're not sure. See, you have the one, he's not sure, but there's innocence, right? So that element of innocence, then they're, you know, open to the idea, but they themselves don't have any determination or understanding or commitment to being, a Godhead, right? So, but basically they're not sure, right? But inimical agnostic means that they're tending towards atheism. They're going that side. So generally they're not sure, but things aren't going right, so they're going to naturally blame God for all that and everything. And thinking, how do you blame somebody if you're not sure they're there, right? You know, whatever. So it's you know, it's fun, but yeah. Whatever, they do it. So inimical. So it doesn't say agnostic, because agnostic would generally be in the category of innocent, right? Atheists are definitely envious, right? Because they profess that there is no God. If you bring it up, they'll profess it. Agnostics generally don't talk about God, right? But atheists always talk about God, right? Because how are they're an atheist, right? So like that. And impersonalists also, they're committed to there is no form of God. But that's what his faith is he has faith that there is an eternal form of the Lord. That's what makes him a neophyte, right? That's what makes him different from the smartest who are worshiping Vishnu.
Yeah.
But don't think that's an eternal form. Mm. Right, so it's not actually devotional service. Right, it looks like it's pratibimba.
Mm.
It appears to be. It's like a distant shadow, or I mean, reflection like that. But it's not actually real. Right. So these ones, you know, and etc. You know, and anybody else who's making trouble. Yes.
Maharaj, this notion of becomes entangled in the pursuit of karma and gyan due to unfavorable association.
Yes, yes.
It seems like a common trap.
Yes.
Because when we go back in the West, there is that notion of working 5 days a week.
Right, right.
You give in 8 hours. So either way, even though that you're trying to give association as opposed to take, the fact is that the association is still there, so it's like a common trap.
No, sir. Means the main thing is that the association means, in other words, you're keeping it light enough that it doesn't go so much into their values, more than just the simple common things of people appreciate a certain kind of weather, or certain other things, or the local footy match, or something like that. But their value systems, where they want the results of karma, want the results of jnana, those kind of things, that's more. So one should, that's why one doesn't get intimate. Because intimate, then they're going to get into that. Right? So therefore, it's just the natural social superficialness, that's so, basically, at least in the modern society, is so dear to everybody. So it's very nice. You can function in that and not actually be, socially awkward, like that. So one tries there. But, of course, there is the element, why are they doing what they're doing unless there's that attachment?
Yes.
Right? Yeah. So there will be that aspect. So like you said, so that's why you want to see that the sadhana is nice, as good as it can be, and outside of the obligations, social obligations, one is associating with devotees. Right?
Yeah. But sometimes you can have a little bit of fun by saying something that freaks them out and then being completely detached to how they react.
That's there, but I'm saying, of course, but then you also have to remember that they're going to be there the next day also. So, they might say something back that will freak you out, So, yeah, so you just don't. Okay, so it says it's frequent. In other words, it's frequent means enough that it has an effect. Right, so frequent can be once every 10 years, or it could be 10 times a day. It depends upon what creates that effect. Okay. In some cases, the Kanishtha neither progresses nor regresses, just remaining at the Kanishtha level, Nityananda Das Babaji. In which cases? Sri Hari Das Babaji. In cases where both Sadhu Sangha and Dveshi Sangha exercise equal influence upon the Kanishtha, his devotion maintains the status quo, right? In other words, he's not giving up his attachment to karma and jnana, right? Because it mentions when that lessens. It doesn't say when it goes away, but that lessens, where he doesn't see it that this is what's going to make me happy. When that lessens, then that's what brings him to the Madhyam platform, right? His faith is strong. That brings him to the Madhyam platform. He has that good association. He gives up the bad association. So here, the bad association is maintained. He doesn't move to good. He has good, but it doesn't become predominant. And because of the bad association, then karma and jnana remain in their kind of position. They're not getting worse because of the good association, but they're not getting better because of the bad association.
Wouldn't this tend to be a kind of disturbing, like being pulled in two directions at once?
Wouldn't it be disturbing? Being in the material world is disturbing, and people are quite used to it.
That's true.
We think it's normal that, like that. So it's just, it is disturbing, but as one gets purified, one notices that. Like so much of the time one's noticing as one goes, so much material desire, so many lower qualities. One thing, we're never there before and now they're coming and what is this? I'm doing devotion. No, they were always there. You just happen to notice them now. You know? Does that make sense? You know, it's like you're going out, you're wearing your outfit, you know, your particular shirt or your pants or your shoes or whatever it is, and you think they look cool, and then one day you notice they don't look cool, right? It's not that they suddenly didn't become cool. They never were cool. Just you thought they were.
Yeah,
you understand? That's what's happening. Yeah. Sri Nityananda Das Babaji. Revered Master, I have understood your explanations of the Kanista devotee. Now kindly describe the Mukya and Gona symptoms of a Madhyam Adhikari Bhakta. Right, so the Mukya and Gona, the Mukya of the Kanista was that faith in the deity. Right? Okay, where is that? Mukya symptom of a Kanista is faith in the eternal form of Bhagavan, which results in the worship of the deity form of Bhagavan, right? So he takes up deity worship. That's why I said that the deity worship is specifically for the Kanista, meaning that all levels are doing it, but the Kanista, that's what is the symptomatic of him actually being a devotee, is that he's worshiping the deity, right? And then the secondary symptoms are his devotional activities, such as hearing, chanting, remembering. They're secondary because they haven't been integrated into that faith that is Krishna, non-different Krishna, that element, so it's not exactly the same. Right? Means, because otherwise that was the doubt. Why aren't they mukya? Because these are eternal activities. It is mukya, but because the neophyte doesn't have that same, he's unable to realize the nature of the pure name. Right, so because of lack of realization, therefore for him it's secondary. Right, but for the madhyam and uttam it's primary. Right, so okay. So here the muktam symptoms, the mukya symptoms of a madhyam adhikari bhakta are, first, ananya bhakti to Sri Krishna. Right, so pure devotion. Second, four qualities are found in his dealings with his fellow devotees, which are atma buddhi. He considers the devotees more dear than his own self. Mamata buddhi. Okay. Okay. Atmaka, which are... Okay, now I get it. Atma buddhi. He considers the devotees more dear than his own self. Then two, mamata buddhi. Intimate affection for the devotees. Then ijya buddhi. He considers the devotees worshipable. And tirtha buddhi. He considers them places of pilgrimage. All right, so that's then in, so that's in the second of his dealings with devotees. Right. So he has ananda bhakti for the Lord, right? Because we're going through, he has those four qualities, means that service to the Lord, the friendship with the devotees, like this. So now he's breaking it down. So ananda bhakti means that devotion to the Lord is pure devotion, right? Then the dealing friendship with the devotees has these four aspects, right? Mm-hmm. Considering the devotees more dear than his own self, intimate affection for the devotees, then he considers devotees worshipable, and tirtha buddhi, he considers them places of pilgrimage. Third, being naturally compassionate, the Madhyam Adhikari Bhakta is mercifully disposed towards those who are ignorant about the absolute truth. Right? They're ignorant about they're not inimical to the absolute truth. That's the difference. You avoid those who are inimical, you are compassionate to those who are ignorant. Right? So if somebody doesn't know, it's because of ignorance. Right, and finally, fourth, he strictly avoids the company of those inimical to Bhagavan. Right, well, the neophyte, he may associate with them, right, because he'll see the external qualities. Right, they're nice people, they're pleasant, they're this. You know, I've sometimes heard it said, oh, but the karmis are more nice than the devotees. But that's a neophyte mentality. The point is they don't have any good qualities. You're appreciating good qualities, but those good qualities are manifest by the modes. They don't belong to that soul. That belongs to his conditioning. Right? The devotee, someone who's a devotee, if they have manifesting good qualities, those are qualities of the soul because he's committed to it. The other ones, they just happen to be, that's how the modes, they're nice, so then other qualities come up. But when they become unnice, then all the bad qualities come up. It's just the modes of nature. They're not actually theirs. That's why when we say, the non-devotee has no good qualities because none of what you see belong to the soul. They all belong to the body.
Mm-hmm.
So you can say, yeah, it's a nice body, like cows. Their body is controlled by goodness. They have nice qualities. Right? Like that. Pleasant. You know? So they're different animals. You know, the koalas are cute and cuddly, you know, right? You know, as long as you don't mind being peed on. But other than that, then, you know, so many different things, the modes of nature make them a nice, attractive, this and that. You know, you have a very nice-looking tree. And then you have another one that's not very nice, right?
Like the dog from yesterday that followed me home.
Oh, okay.
Nice.
Nice dog, huh? Yeah. Does that make sense? So the problem is they're seeing the external as reality and thinking this is nice. But then the problem is then the karma and jnana and the materialistic nature then comes along with it.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So therefore, it's not actually nice. It's like, you know, poison in a fancy bottle, you know, or a sword in a very nice jeweled sheath. Mm-hmm. Looks great, but it'll kill you. You know. Yes.
In Maharaj, it's being attached to karma and jnana is possible to stay always kanishkadika.
Yes, if you
very long time.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's just by definition is that having lost that faith, it doesn't mean that still when there's not practices of that, but by habits of that.
Yes.
But the point is the determination is not that. Mm-hmm. Neophyte, there's still the determination that through karma and jnana I can be happy. But the Madhyama means that doesn't have that.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
And this is the starting of pure devotion.
Yes, yeah. Because then one gets situated that it's only Krishna, right? Because the qualities that you're seeing in the material nature are Krishna, because material nature is dead matter. So Krishna's potency is there. That's what you're attracted to, right? Does that make sense? So the manifestation is the masculine principle is that quality. The feminine principle is the forms and actions that reveal that quality. You know what I'm saying? And so generally we only see the external. We're attracted because of the quality, but we only look at the forms and the activities. We get distracted by that.
Maharaj, these characteristics of Madhyama Adhikari, if any of a devotee sees trying to follow these qualities and his prescribed duties of his level, so that is progressive?
Yes, it's progressive. In other words, if you know what the goal is, you know how the progress is, then one will always move through that. You know you value it, then naturally you'll move at some pace you'll move through. Right? Difficulty comes is if we don't have that appreciation. Right? And we don't think, or worse is that we think it's not important. Oh, only associated devotees, so that's fanatic, you know, why, you know, people will think we're strange and we're standoffish. And I mean, says, who's not standoffish, right? Can you just walk into anybody's party? No, they're invited, you know, it's a black tie, you have to have a black tie. You don't have a black tie, you don't get in. You know, it says, oh, what about the liberal, what's liberal in this world, you know what I'm saying? You know, everyone talks as if it's just the commonest thing that it's going on everywhere. Where is it going on?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? That's the thing. It's not going on. All it is there's certain areas people are a little more liberal than others. That area, you're liberal, so you call yourself liberal. But everything else you do is not liberal. And someone else is liberal in a different area. Therefore, in my consideration, they're not liberal. But in their consideration, they're liberal, I'm not. You know, so it's like that. You know, does that make sense?
Yes.
You know,
so we should try to follow this.
Lovely.
So we should try to follow this qualities.
Yes. So that's why they're being discussed, so we know what they are and we know what to look for. Otherwise, we just kind of like go along in service. But here, then you actually know what to look for. You know. You know, am I still attached to karma and jnana? Do I have that faith in Krishna? Do I, you know what I'm saying, do I have the faith in the name, the devotees? Like these come up, then it naturally shifts the position. Right? Because it's not about position. It's about progressing towards pure unalloyed devotion. So it's just that these are the points where you can see nicely. You know, it's just like you're trying to get to Calcutta, and you go, okay, now we're at Krishnagar. It's not that being at Krishnagar is the important thing, but it's just, it's useful because it's on the way to Calcutta. You know, and it's not, okay, that we're at Krishnagar, so we can hang out here for a while. You can do, but when are you going to get to Calcutta? You know what I'm saying? So then you get Ranagat, then you get like this. And so then slowly, that's the idea. Okay. The principal activity of the Madhyam Adhikari Bhakta is to execute bhakti sadhana, devotion in practice. This consists of abhideya, devotional performances, within the sphere of fully realized sabandha jnana, eternal knowledge to attain prayojana, the prime perfection, Krishna prema. Essentially, this means that when the Madhyam Adhikari Bhakta performs hearing and chanting, etc., in the association of sadhus, he does so offenselessly. Right, so that's the how one can see it, right? That's the basically you can say the symptom. So for him, the nine processes are now the mukya, the primary. Right, they were secondary for the neophyte simply because he doesn't realize the actual glories of them. He knows they're good. He knows they're doing, but to actually appreciate what he has. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, like let's say there's a child, you know, and they're born in a rich family. So they're small, right? And they're moving on. So they're appreciating all the wealth. You know, they don't mind, you know, that the seat in the back of their, you know, having Maybach, you know, it goes out like in an airplane or something, like in a first class chair. So they're cool with that, you know, like that. You know, they don't have a problem with it, but they don't actually understand how special that is. Just no other cars have that, you know, but for them it's just normal. So for the neophyte, yeah, we chant, we do this, that, it's normal. It's like that. So they're identifying as a devotee, so that's good, but to actually appreciate how special chanting is, how special devotional service, how like that. That's the thing. Right? But because that's it's also, you know, Maya's, you know, it's all there. Like Prabhupada said, you know, we're not afraid of Maya, you know. So that's the thing, is that if we don't quite see, so then it becomes for the Madhyama, it becomes more because they appreciate what it is. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore it becomes primary. Because if you appreciate that, then karma and jnana are going to go. Because for the neophyte, karma and jnana are there, and that faith is there. You know, so but for the Madhyama, then it's the primary because the karma and jnana go. Right? And at the same time, so he's performing this abhideya, which is the nine processes, within the sphere of fully realized sambandha jnana. He understands, I am servant of Krishna. Krishna is God, right? I am not the controller and enjoyer, I'm the servant. Right, developing love for Krishna is the ultimate goal, and the practices of devotional service are the real activity. Right, so with that, he's performing the devotional activities. Yes.
Do we distinguish between knowledge and realization here?
Knowledge. It says fully realized there. Oh. So realized means he's acting on it.
Oh, yeah.
But fully realized means he realizes those positions. It doesn't necessarily mean that he has huge volumes of detail of sambandha jnana, but he has the principal points and he's realized that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's how you can have someone who's very scholarly in sambandha jnana but hasn't necessarily realized. He may understand it but hasn't realized it. Or he's realized part or, you know, something. Okay. Right, and so therefore, he has a sambandha jnana, he's performing devotional service, and he knows that developing love for Krishna, Krishna prema, is the goal. Right, so he's very fixed in that. Yes.
Offenseless,
yeah.
Because, you know, you can still be chanting in the mind as well, and
It wanders because it's going to things that it thinks it will get some taste from, right? It means you're not thinking about things that you're not interested in. Right? Does that make sense? No, you're thinking about things that you feel will interest you. So when the taste for the name is what interests you, then that will be fixed, right? So this would indicate when we get the idea that this will be the one with taste, ruchi. Because now if you're taking these qualities, right, you're naturally going to give what is the typical. No, the typical neophyte, the typical madhyam, the typical uttam. Right? So that means is that each of them is in three stages. You have kanista, kanista, madhyam, kanista, uttam, kanista, right? You have kanista, madhyam, 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 uttam, madhyam. So what it's defining is the madhyam, kanista, madhyam, madhyam. Right? The middle one. Because before that, the faith is not so strong in the neophyte, and now it's starting to give up those desires and things like that. He's maturing. So that's getting more towards the madhyam. So the typical is the middle. So the typical madhyam will be the middle. That's ruchi. So nishta, he starts that, but it hasn't come quite as strongly as this. But it's there. It's fixed. It's stable, but it hasn't intensified. Right? Because the taste it hasn't come. You know what I'm saying? It means as a steady, consistent. Steady, constant, excuse me.
So when Fu-Pei,
yes. It means why does it wander? It's wandering to things you have taste for. Right? Is it wandering to something you don't have a taste for? It always wanders to something you have a taste for. You don't have a taste, why would you think about it? Does that make sense?
Sometimes some things pop up where you just think, where did that come from?
Yeah, it's called samskar. It's all there. It's just, if the right situation, it pops up. But if it doesn't, it doesn't. Yeah, so that's what's there. By chanting Hare Krishna, all those go away. In other systems, they don't go away. That's the difficulty. Why would we say it doesn't go away? Because the impersonalist, he's merged into the Brahman, effulgent. So he has no material body, no material, any connection. But when he gets bored, right, what is it? He remembers the activities of the material world. So that means they don't go away. So only devotional service can get rid of that. Right? And remember, the mind comes with you lifetime after lifetime. So even if you haven't done it now, you did it sometime.
Piled up.
Yeah, it's like, you know, where did that come from? It's just saying, you know, how many lifetimes back, you know, that one is that one. But, you know, it's there. And it has an effect why you're in the position you're in now. Right? The conditioning now is based on the accumulation of all that. So one may say, you know, that's not me. It says, okay, it's not you, it's what caused you. Yes.
Well, it's just out of curiosity, as we chant, as this thick layer of dust comes off of some sort.
Right.
For it to come out, does it come up?
Yes. Just like, let's say, that closet with all the junk in that you just don't think about, right? Now you want to get rid of all that. It's all, you haven't thought about it for years. You don't even remember what's in the closet. But to get rid of what's in the closet, you're going to have to see it. Right? So the point is you haven't been thinking about it, so when you drag it out of the closet, if you still don't think about it, you throw it out. But if as you drag it out, you go, oh, this is where, you know, then you keep it. It goes back in the closet. So that's the point, is that all those desires you've had at one time and they've been important to you. So Maya's not going to throw out something that's important to you. You know what I'm saying? So therefore she's going to, you know, show it to you before it gets thrown out. And if you go, oh, you know, then she puts it back. And if you don't react, then it gets thrown out. So it's that constant just stream of stuff. But that's the stream where we don't get involved, right? In other words, that stream of consciousness, we don't write it down into a book, right? It's not important that Finnegan has a shop that sells ale. It's not important. You just don't write it down. right? You don't talk about it. You just let it go. Because it's just what's going on. You know, it's just, you know. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
When we clean that closet and we see things that make us feel really bad, is that a purification process?
Bad in what way? Bad we've forgotten it for so long?
I was so stupid
for yes, but don't think about it so much that one in the negative therefore becomes attached, because that you identify with it, because it's not us. We're so foolish that we've done those things, but it's not us. You know what I'm saying? Because as we were discussing, the soul actually doesn't do anything. The senses, the mind, the intelligence, they're doing things, right? By the effect of the modes of nature. But we identify with it, that's why we get the experience and the reaction. But we don't have to identify with it. You know what I'm saying?
So pretty much just recognize it and go with it.
That, yeah, just in other words, it's just that neutral state, right? How does it say you deal with, you know, what's not proper? You're indifferent. So in other words, it's just, you know, it's been there, but it's not important anymore. So therefore, it will go. If you think it's important, then, you know, in other words, if it creates an identity, either positive or negative, then that's a problem. Does that make sense? Because people create negative identities. Oh, I'm so useless. I'm the loser. You know, I'm the schlamazel. Right? You know, it always happens to me. But it's an identity. Right? So you want to avoid that also. The point is, we're servant of Krishna. So, does that make sense? So when it comes up, don't worry about it. It means one can contemplate, yes, that's foolish, with the idea that, you know, we'll avoid anything like that. We're committed to avoiding stuff like that. But don't lament about it. You know, does that make sense?
Like, for example, if we recognize, wow, I've wasted so much money, for example.
Yeah.
Can that be like as something that can be a lesson?
Yes, of course. But we don't now think I'm the one who wastes money. Right? It's not us. It was a waste of money. It's not that I'm doing that. That was a waste of money, so now I shouldn't waste money. Does that make sense? So it's the difference between seeing it as an action or seeing it as an identity. In other words, means we don't identify with it. Like someone else is doing something stupid, you go, that's stupid, I'm not going to do that. Right? But if we identify with that, then we'll do that. So the whole idea is to recognize it, but not learn from it, but not identify with it. Does that make sense?
So not identifying with the things, not dwelling on
it. Yeah, not dwelling on it, not considering its connection to you in the way of that it's you and it's that it's part of you. And it's just that these things have been done. We were stupid. We've done so many things. Right. Is that okay? Yes.
If you feel ashamed, if you do something wrong, it's also...
It's okay, but as long as you're ashamed, is that I won't do that anymore. But ashamed means then that's a mode of ignorance. So it means the activity is in the mode of ignorance. So the ashamed is just the reaction. Does that make sense? It's just basically the false ego and ignorance. Right? It means action and ignorance then creates shame. Right? It means it's done in goodness, then you feel inspired. Does that make sense? So it just means that was an activity that was an ignorance, so just don't get involved. Is that it?
You explained that when this closet is open and these things are shown to us, we can decide. We can put it back. So if I understand correctly, there is like a conscious endeavor that you want to give up these things.
Yes.
And the other day, Radha Maharaj was explaining that some qualities, or maybe bad qualities of us, are so strong that we feel like overpowered by it, that we depend on the mercy of Krishna. So how does it work, this conscious endeavor of the mercy of Krishna? Because if I understand that I can, by my own endeavor, I can give up these things. And he was explaining that some qualities are so strong in our character that this will help us, that we depend on mercy.
The point is we're always helpless. We just think that we're doing. You know what I'm saying? So the point is, because see, in when you gave the example, you say that these things are being shown to us, but we can put it back. No, if it's being shown to us, then whoever's showing it to us will put it back. You know what I'm saying? If we're doing it, then we take it out and we put it back. The point is you have to desire to get rid of these things. At the same time, as then you'll be assisted in that process. See, the problem is it's overwhelming to us because we think it is us and that we are the doer. So when he says it's so deep, it's because we so much identify with it. You know, if it's not us, what's the big deal? Does that make sense? So the point is we're always dependent. We're always dependent upon the Lord's mercy. But we have to desire it. It's not that we're just sit back and then Krishna will do it. The Lord is only going to do what we're interested in. If we're not interested, it's not going to happen. Is that? The Gona symptoms are seen in the way the Madhyamadikari Bhakta lives his life. The Madhyamadikari Bhakta lives fully surrendered to the desire of Krishna, and his life is so arranged as to execute bhakti favorably. Right, so in other words, he's engaging the naimittic elements in the Lord's service. He arranges a life so those naimittic elements that aren't important and are just you know not used or not avoided, and those that are useful are engaged. So that's the secondary. So the primary is engagement in devotional service with the proper sambandhyan in the association of devotees. Right? Does that make sense? Right? So that means it's offenseless, because pure means offenseless. Right? So then, the secondary is engaging the conditioned nature. Does that make sense? While for the neophyte, engagement in his conditioned nature is the element that he considers that is my devotion.
Yeah.
Right? Because I'm so expert on material qualities, that's why my devotion is going so well. Right? Right, I sang the kirtan so nicely. That's why it was devotional.
Mm.
Right? Or, does that make sense?
Yeah.
It, rather than it's the desire to please Krishna that makes it. Does that make sense? So it's reversed. The naimittic is secondary in his mind, and the devotion is primary. While for the neophyte, the primary thing that you see is his naimittic. But he has the faith that Krishna is the Supreme Lord and all that, but he still has faith in karma and jnana.
Yeah. Yes. So the Majjhima, he knows that it's his conditioning he's engaged.
Yeah, he just knows the conditioning and knows that this is what you engage. Yeah, you know, it's not us, but it's what you have.
So
you know what I'm saying? Let's say you go to the store, right? And they want money, right? So you pull out, you know, a 500 rupee note, right?
And they go...
You know, because you need 1,000 rupee note. Okay, so you pull out the 1,000 rupee note. But are you that note? No, but that's what you have. So that's what you deal with, right? So now if they don't have change, you have to deal with that. You know?
Yeah. So you know, he's prepared to give it up. He's not attached to his conditioning.
No, he's not attached to conditioning, but he accepts what is there and uses that.
Yeah.
Like that. Well, the neophyte being attached to it, then there's all the social considerations, this and that. The Madhyama, you know, if he's a Shudra, it's not a problem. It's the neophyte who has a problem being a Shudra. Unless everybody else is a Shudra. And then as long as he's the bigger Shudra, right? No, that's all. That's the main point is that. Yes.
When I started with book distribution and I was...
Started with?
Book distribution.
Okay.
I was preached that I should surrender more than the results will come. Like general preaching, and I was never like on the first places, so it was all the time to me food that I don't surrender enough, therefore the results doesn't come. So how is it connected to this surrender and the results coming? Because some maybe Sometimes it is like that.
No, but the point is they are connected, but the point is if you're only surrendering to get results, then it's going to be according to, you know, your qualification. You know what I'm saying? In other words, do you have the karma that you have such good salesmanship skills that therefore then you're going to do so well? Because if it's like I'm surrendering so I get the result, that's still a matter of thinking the action itself is doing it, rather than Krishna. When we say surrender, you'll get the result. They're not talking about this is your technique to use. They're talking about just the actual situation. You understand? If you're using it as technique, then Krishna might give, might not give. But if you're using it as understanding the actual situation, then you just surrender. You don't worry about the results. Because if you're surrendered, you're not worrying about the results. You're worrying about the results. You're not surrendered. You understand? Because the question here is that, is the process working? Because I surrendered, but I didn't get the results. But is that what is that what Krishna consciousness is for? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. So, others may be doing better. Maybe it's because of that surrender, that devotion, or maybe it's just because they're allowing their natural material skills of salesmanship to come forward. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is in any case, so the one who's you know, saying it's so easy and it's this and that, and you know, how come you can't understand this and just, you know, surrender, that's generally skill. And if it's the one of just, you know, it's by Krishna's mercy and that, you just try to please Krishna and that's by surrender.
We were talking about taking shelter compared to surrendering some days ago.
Yes, that would be there. Yeah, taking shelter is of course. Because the point is you're surrendering, then Krishna has to reciprocate, or you take shelter of Krishna, and then Krishna arranges. Yeah, that's good. You understand? So, because I surrendered, then Krishna has to reciprocate. You know? So it's a matter you take shelter. Then whatever is supposed to happen will happen.
Someone may suggest that the activity of seeking out the association of devotees is also karma, and that we should be detached to whether or not we get that association.
Why don't you become detached from being detached? But why are they so attached to their position of detachment? You know what I'm saying? The person's saying, why attached to finding the association, but why are they attached to the concept of not looking for it? Because they say if you're looking for it, you're attached. So then they're saying by not looking for it, you're detached. Why are they attached to their detachment? Mm-hmm. You understand? Attachment is there, otherwise why would it bother them? You know what I'm saying? Now if you're sick and you seek out the medicine that will cure your sickness, will we call that attachment?
So it is not karma to seek out the association of devotees.
What in our philosophy does karma have anything to do with bhakti?
No.
Is bhakti in any way produced by karma? So that means if associating with devotees is devotional, that means seeking out that association can't be karma. You know, because then they're saying by not doing it, that's devotion. You know, all it is mode of ignorance, is I don't want to make the endeavor. Mm-hmm. The point is if the person's just sitting somewhere in the temple there, chanting japa all day, and saying this, okay, so they're a bit too neutral. But if they're not making the endeavor to find the association of devotees, but they're making great endeavor to arrange their material situation, that's inconsistent. Because if you're going to be not attached, why are you worrying about, you know, all these different things? You know what I'm saying? So why are you worried about that but not the association of devotees? So that means it's quite neophyte. Because neophyte at least would appreciate that the association of devotees is important. even though he also doesn't mind associating with the non-devotees. But here, if you're more committed to associate with the non-devotees than the devotees, that means the neophyte position is very well situated. You know, in other words, it's very neophyte. I mean, devotees come up with all these things because all they're doing is playing with words. Right? It's just wordplay. So they're taking a word that's used in one context and putting it into another. You know, why you're so attached to breathing? You know, why be detached? You know? You know what I'm saying? You can apply it anywhere. It's just like, if you have nothing to do, this is what you do. Right? People who are engaged in devotional service, they don't come up with these kind of strange things. Okay, the Madhyamadhikari lives fully surrendered to the desire of Krishna, and his life is so arranged as to execute bhakti favorably. Right?
Yeah.
Sri Nityanandas Babaji. Does he still commit papa and aparad? Sri Haridas Babaji. Some tendency to commit sins or offenses may remain in the beginning stage, but gradually these will disappear. In other words, he's come to the Madhyama platform, so there may be a tendency now and again, but it's not the standard. So when we're saying someone is offensive, means he's always offensive.
Yeah.
If he's saying offenseless, that means basically he's offenseless. Occasionally there might be. So in the beginning it'll be that. So we're saying is when it's nicely situated, you basically don't see that. That's where it's come to the middle stage. Right? Because when you begin, beginning of Madhyama means you've just left the advanced stage of Kanista. So there's going to be, you know, enough difference that the symptoms are different, but it'll still have some similarities.
So the threshold is to become aware that you're making offenses. You were talking earlier that you are aware.
It means the threshold of bhakti as in the neophyte here?
Yeah,
or
going towards Madhyam. Like,
yeah, it means the more you understand what is the standard and all that, then the more it becomes dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is that the Kanista, because of his position, right, because it's said that if you're dealing with the innocent, who do you deal with? The ones that are the most responsive and most favorable. So that would mean, of all the Balisha, that Kanista is more in that position than those who are not, have not surrendered. So naturally they'll get more attention. So that's the advantage of the neophyte, is he's in a position to take advantage of the association of the preacher. Right? Does that make sense? And that's how he advances. Right? That's why if it's said you don't take that important, then how you'll advance.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's the point, is the Madhyama associates, you know, basically exclusively with advanced devotees. He's kind to the innocent, but as far as association, he's only there. So if you say, why would you seek that out? How are you even going to advance as a neophyte? And by that, you're not going to have good association, because it says you can not advance and not regress by having equal amounts of advanced association and materialistic. But if you don't seek out advance, you only have materialistic. It's just a matter of time before you fall from the neophyte platform. Like that.
And then they get beaten up in the material world, and then they come back, and then they fall down. And then
like that. It's That's why roller coasters are so popular.
Yeah.
Okay. Some tendency to commit sins or offenses may remain in the beginning stage, right? But gradually these will disappear. In other words, in Nishta you might find some of them, but generally when it comes to Ruchi you won't see them anymore. Because all idea that something material can give me satisfaction is not there. So the material is basically gone. But it doesn't mean that his taste for the holy name is as strong as someone in prema, right? It means it's beginning, right? Just like we say shraddha, mature faith is prema. But when it begins, because it's prominent in your mind, So ruchi means that there's much more advanced stages of taste, but ruchi is when the concept of the taste of the name is prominent on your mind. You think, this is so nice, this is, I like this so much. So that's ruchi. Right? Asakti means you're more attached to the taste, but it's now the attachment is the prominence. Right? Bhava, the ecstasy is the prominence. Does that make sense? It's just what's prominent. But it's not that it's they're not there. Whatever sins or offenses are still present at the beginning of the Madhyama stage are like chickpeas that are just about to be ground to a pulp. They are still seen as small lumps, but within a few moments they will be crushed and will cease to exist. Right? Okay. Yukta Vairagya, appropriate renunciation, is the life and soul of the Madhyama Bhakta. Right, so the Madhyama Bhakta is able to perform it because it's a secondary for him. The problem is for the neophyte, Yukta Vairagya, it's there, but it's more Yukta and less Vairagya. You know, that's the thing. You know? Because it says appropriate renunciation. So the neophyte renounces things he shouldn't and accepts things he shouldn't. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, the neophyte, he's there. He sees losing some of the taste in family life because he's not putting in the effort, and he thinks it's supposed to be so wonderful. But with time, it's not so wonderful, just because one, is material energy never is wonderful, and two, he actually doesn't know what he's doing. So therefore, he figures there's a problem here. So he becomes very renounced. So he goes out and, you know, doesn't pay so much time to the family and all that. So he's renouncing something he shouldn't. But at the same time, is he doesn't mind associating in that with all the other newer ladies and that he meets and preaching to them, and they seem so enthusiastic, right? Because it's the beginning. So naturally everything's like that. So he thinks, ah, this is great. This is where the real, it's really happening. So he's accepting what he shouldn't be and rejecting what he shouldn't. So it's not appropriate. Right? Does that make sense? You know, he'll say, this is a renunciation, that's Yukta Vairagya. You know, it's like that. It's not balanced. You know? Or he has things that he uses in Krishna's service. Right, materialistic things, but the reason he has them is simply because he wants them. You don't really need them. Right? You need to breathe. Right? So that you use in Krishna's service. Does that make sense? But you know, you don't need, you know, so many things are not necessary. Does that make sense? You know, 200 pairs of shoes, not necessary. Like that. But it's Tuesday. I can't wear what I wore on Monday. What do you mean? They're not necessary. Yeah, so like that. These are the Tuesday shoes. I have to wear the Tuesday shoes. But it's Friday, Prabhu. Oh. Then I'll wear the Friday shoes. What happened to the Tuesday shoes? That's for next Tuesday. Sri Nityananda Das Babaji. I now have a proper understanding of the symptoms of the Madhyam Adhikari Bhaktas. Is an Uttam Adhikari Bhakta seen to have any Gona symptoms? Right? Because now if performance of devotional activities is, the Abhideya is the Mukhya symptoms of the Madhyama, right? And his Naimittik is the secondary. So now, naturally, the Uttama, he's going to be functioning on the platform of his quality of Mukhya Abhideya is going to be much greater. Right? His devotional activity is going to be even more, you know, important, primary. You know, I mean, you know. So the point is now, since he's on the liberated platform, are there any secondary symptoms? Right? So that's intelligent, because you would think the next question, okay, what are the primary and secondary of the... No, but he says, are they actually... It's understood primary is going to be the furtherance of that, but just the prema and everything is greater. But is there any secondary? Right? Haridas Babaji, if at all Gona symptoms are to be discerned, then they are the natural activities of his body. In other words, the other one is he's identifying what the conditioning is, what the naimittik is, and suitably engaging it, right? Appropriate renunciation for the Madhyama, right? He sees that he has this nature, so he can do these kinds of services, like this and that. But we see with the with the Uttama, it's only discerned in that the body is engaged in doing its activities, but he's not actually involved. The modes of nature are taking care of it for him. He's only absorbed in Krishna. And even then, these activities are to such an extent subservient to the demands of his Krishna prema that such gona symptoms are practically impossible to identify. Because he's so absorbed in discussing about Krishna with the other advanced devotees that they forget to sleep, right? It's not that he says, you know, hey, we're going to stay up all night tonight, you know, and wake me up if I fall asleep. You know, it's that kind of thing, you know. And so it's like that. It's just they start talking, and normally they stop, and then they go back to their ashram and go to sleep, and so, but they forget. So they just, and then it's morning. Okay, so it's time to bath, and then go to the morning sadhana. It's just, they forget. So it's practically non-existent, because it's just whatever happens to fit in. Right? In other words, the madhyama is taking the conditioning, reducing it down to what is, you know, useful, and then engaging it in the proper way. Right? But for the uttama, it becomes so secondary that it has to fit around the primary that it may get a spot, might not. Right? Yeah. Yeah, so it's practically impossible to identify. You just don't think about it. You don't think of secondary systems, symptoms, when you think of the six Goswamis. You just think about their chanting and reading and writing and preaching and their particular sadhanas. You don't think of anything else. Right? It means Raghunath Das would offer 2,000 obeisances to the Vaishnavas every day. Right, I'm sure if you stood there and watched, then you might notice that, you know, he's getting a little tired, so now he's not getting up as quickly, or maybe his knee hurts because, you know, when he gets up, he favors that. But that's the gona symptom. But that the body's doing itself. He's not focused on it at all. He's just thinking about offering obeisances to the Vaishnavas. Right? Does that make sense? Well, the madhyama, he'd be a little more careful about that. Right, because he has to work with that knee, right? You know, but the uttama doesn't really worry about those things. Right? Nityananda, that means, doesn't mean he's crazy. It just means he doesn't worry about it. Nityananda Das Babaji, revered master, I know that Kanishta Adhikari Bhaktas are not encouraged to leave family and home. The Madhya Adhikari Bhaktas can be both in household life and in the renounced orders, but can an Uttam Adhikari Bhakta be in the householder life? Right? So in other words, Kanishta is generally is better situated in family life. The Madhya could be or could not be, depends on the situation. But the Uttama, the naturally wouldn't be, but could he be? Haridas Babaji. These three grades, Kanishta, Madhya, and Uttama, are assigned according to the level of bhakti, and elevation to one of these grades does not depend upon whether one is a grihastha or a sannyasi. Right? In other words, it's the devotion, it's not the external. That's why the social or whatever it is, if it's not unfavorable, it's not adjusted. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his family life was favorable, so therefore it's not, you don't have to adjust from there. You know what I'm saying? Let's say you're cooking in the kitchen, you have a pot that works really well. Do you have to give up that pot, you know, to cook better for Krishna? If it's working, what's the problem? You know, if the pot's not there, then you do something else. Right? You know, there's no pots. Okay, so you bake it, you know, things like that. You know, so an Uttamadhikari Bhakti devotee can very well be in Grihastha life. All the devotees of Raja are Grihasthas, and yet they are the most elevated Uttamadhikari Bhaktas. Many amongst the most intimate associates of our beloved Sriman Mahaprabhu are Grihastha Bhaktas, and again they are Uttamadhikaris. Srila Ramananda Rai is an illustrious example. Sri Nityananda Das Babaji. Dear Master, how then should a Madhyam Adhikari Bhakta in the sannyas order and an Uttamadhikari Bhakta in the Grihastha life behave towards each other? Okay, so now we've established that it's the Uttam, Madhyam, and Kanishta is simply the realization and their engagement in the devotional process. So therefore, on the externals of social functioning, how does a Madhyama sannyasi interact with an Uttama Grihastha? You know, what would be the proper social etiquette? Because the one is more advanced, but the other, the social position, is more advanced. Sri Hari Das Babaji. Vaishnav etiquette demands that a lower order bhakta offer prostrate obeisances to the more elevated bhakta. This stipulation applies specifically to the Madhyam Adhikari Bhakta, because the Uttam Adhikari Bhakta does not expect or demand any respect or obeisances for himself, for he sees the presence of the Supreme Lord within every living entity. So these rules of respect in that are for the Madhyam, right? And of course the Kanista. Kanista should know about him, whether he follows him or not, is another thing. But the Uttama, he's automatically respectful to everyone because he sees everyone as, he said, sees the presence of the Supreme Lord within everyone. So therefore, the Lord's there, there's devotees there. So they see like that. So that should be done. Right? So it's a matter of, is the higher principle is who's more advanced. That's the thing. Then the social etiquette is another element. Sri Nityananda Das Babaji. I can understand that without dainya, humility, and daya, compassion, one cannot be a Vaishnava. Okay. Sri Hari Das Babaji. Quite true. Sri Nityananda Das Babaji. Does this indicate that Bhakti Devi, the goddess of Shuddha Bhakti, is dependent upon humility and compassion? Sri Hari Das Babaji. Bhakti Devi is independent, right? So we're saying, because then the point comes, if I'm humble and I'm compassionate, so is that then the basis of bhakti? But he's pointing out, no, Bhakti Devi is independent.
Yeah.
Right? She functions independently. Yeah. So that means it's her that's manifesting. It's not you're making her manifest. Right? Bhakti Devi is independent. She is herself beauty personified and the most valuable jewel. She does not require support from any other excellences. Right? So beauty personified means all good qualities are there. Right? Dainya and daya are not separate or independent excellences, but inherent to the very character of Bhakti Devi herself. So those are inherent in her qualities. So if you have bhakti, those are naturally there. It's not because you have them, then you get bhakti. No. Having had the proper faith, the proper association, right? And then expressing that through your practices, that being pleased as she manifests, then naturally the humility and the compassion come along with it. Right? Does that make sense? But it's not that one's not practicing, you know, that to see in the situation you didn't act properly, so I could have acted properly because a devotee, according to etiquette, should do this or should do that. But we're not trying to separately endeavor for humility. We're trying to see, the point is natural. I'm servant of Krishna. What's my position? Right? You could say, okay, I'm a big servant. Right? We're 1/10,000th the tip of the hair. Right? So we're not big servants. Right? We're always under the protection of the Lord's energy. Right? Because we're the smallest of all the energies. Does that make sense? When the devotee feels, I am an eternal servant of Krishna, without possessions and penniless, and Sri Krishna is everything to me, the emotion expressed therein is dainya. Especially, right, because it's not mine, it belongs to Krishna. Otherwise, if it's mine, then there's pride.
Yeah.
Right? So there may be in one's, as one's quota, there may be possessions and money. But the point is it's not actually ours, it's Krishna's. It's only a quota he's given us, right? Just like, let us say, the master has a servant, right? So he wants him to go purchase something, right? There's service to do. So then he gives money. So now if the servant thinks, now I have money, then that's false ego, there'll be a problem. But it's not that money's not with him. But it's not that it's his money. So the point is I have nothing. I don't have any, you know, influence. I don't have any of these things. It's Krishna. Right? And so whatever happens to be there, you use it for Krishna. And if it's not there, then you don't worry about it. Essentially, bhakti is the bhava of tender affection for Krishna. while tender affection for other living entities, who are all eternal servants of the Lord, is daya. Okay, so affection towards Krishna is humility. Affection towards others is compassion. Right, interesting. Simple definition.
Yeah.
It's all based on affection. Because we say that love is the essential natural quality of the jiva. That means all the other qualities will come out of that.
And affection for oneself.
Affection for oneself. Yeah.
Isn't it that it's said in Bhagavatam that there are 11 subdivisions of love, what love consists of? I think there is
sure.
a list of all these compassion.
Oh, maybe you should find them.
Yeah.
Drag them out.
Yeah, that's right.
Because that'll come up someplace in here. We'll talk about the 7 qualities inherent in the soul.
Yeah.
Like that. I'm not sure where, but it comes along.
That's right.
In, you know, these first chapters.
Mm.
Therefore, both Dhanya and Daya are naturally embodied in bhakti, right? Because you have affection for Krishna and affection for the Vaishnavas. That's naturally part of the devotional process. So this thing, if you're not seeking out Vaishnavas, the problem is that Krishna is with Vaishnavas. So how are you going to serve Krishna? Because we're not serving Krishna directly. So you have to serve Krishna with and through the Vaishnavas. So if you want to serve Krishna, you have to do that in the association of devotees. So if you're not seeking that association, what is that? What's the use of such renunciation? And then the question comes, the sense, when does renunciation, that's the foremost quality, right? We're supposed to renounce our own idea, right? And take up Krishna's idea. So we're attached to our own idea of what renunciation is rather than what Krishna says is renunciation. Okay. Kshama, forgiveness, is a bhava between Dhanya and Daya. When the bhava of Dhanya, I am wretched and lowly, how can I be the judge and punisher of everybody, mingles with the bhava of Daya, the feeling of Kshama is produced. Therefore, Kshama is also inherent in bhakti. So forgiveness is also there. So that's why it said that for a Brahman, forgiveness is the primary quality. You know, we'll think it's purity, it's this, it's that, it's actually forgiveness. Right. So therefore, if one can't forgive, then that means the bhakti is something less, because it's inherent in bhakti. Right? But it said if there's the idea of humility is there, then you think, how can I punish?
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, if you're compassionate, then you'll naturally forgive. Right? Because you think, no, I can punish. I have a right for this.
Yeah.
So that means there's a position. So therefore, forgiveness is not strong.
Right. It's also that if person is not giving chamas, then his mind will be disturbed, like giving
the person's means oneself. Means oneself, or
yeah, oneself.
Yes, of course. Because otherwise, if one's not forgiving, that means you're being still disturbed by what you feel they're doing wrong,
mm-hmm.
or have done wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing. Those are reactions, but the point is disturbing will be there, unless you're not disturbed by being disturbed, right? So those who are, you know. Undisturbed in their disturbed state.
Fixed in their disturbedness.
Yes, fixed in their disturbedness. Shri Krishna, the jiva, the subservience of the jiva to Shri Krishna, and the unwanted sojourn of the materially conditioned jiva within this mundane world are all satya, truth. Therefore, bhakti must also be satya, because all these truths are based upon the relationship between Krishna and the jiva, which is in essence bhakti. Hence we see that satya, dhanya, daya, and kshama are all intrinsic to the very nature of bhakti devi. Shri Nityananda Das Babaji, how should the Vaishnava behave with persons of other systems of dharma? Haridas Babaji, the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.26 states, saintly persons who are fully peaceful and free of the propensity to enviously criticize others, worship others worship the all blissful forms of the Supreme Lord, Sri Narayan, and his plenary portions. Actually, there is no Dharma other than Vaishnava Dharma. All other religions propagated in the world, including those to be propagated in future years, factually comprise different steps upon the ascension to Vaishnava Dharma. Or alternatively, there are deviations from the essential Vaishnava Dharma, right? Because that's what we're seeing when we're going through the six systems. It means they're essentially aspects, you know, in the process of Vaishnava Dharma. But they're not being applied in that way. If they're applied in that way, they're steps on it. If they're not being applied in that way, they're deviations on it. So that way, any religion, whatever it is at the particular time, is just that. There is no such thing as religion other than Vaishnava Dharma. It's just how much of it you're accepting. Does that make sense? You know, they have their own religion. They may not accept God. They may this, they may that, but they accept that association and that you have to be kind and nice to everybody. So that point of a sadhu sangha or that devotee association, they're accepting that principle. That's not being applied on devotees. But that principle is there. So that's what gives that camaraderie. They feel that they're part of something and this and that. Right? There's a regulation. There's standards. There's etiquette. So all these are part of the Vaishnava Dharma. So actually there is only Vaishnava Dharma. There's not something else. It's not that there's this, that, the other thing. They're just all different parts of it. So they become different because they take one part and not another part.
So whatever works for other systems is in line with Vaishnava.
Yeah, whatever works in another system is in line with. That's why it works. You know, just like anything that works in the material platform works because it's actually in line with the Veda. But the point is that if you don't know it, you don't get the credit as such. You know what I'm saying?
The mechanic.
Yeah, you know, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Let's say you lost something. You were looking for something. So you went through the whole house trying to find it. And because there's clutter all over the place, you know, you move the clutter so that you can see what you're doing. Right? You don't get credit that you cleaned the house. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Yeah. It means you get the benefit of it, but you don't get the credit. Right? Others won't say that, oh, you cleaned the house so nicely. Because you didn't. You only moved stuff because, you know. You know what I'm saying? Or you were trying to look for something and so you moved the sofa. Right? You know, and moved the chairs around like that. So you don't get the credit for having redecorated the living room. You know what I'm saying? Like that, yeah. So in other words, you get some benefit, makes you know, your efficiency to get done what you wanted to get done is there, but you don't get that credit. So in other words, you followed the Vedic, so you got the mechanics of it, the niti aspect of it worked, of the Veda, but the Dharma didn't. Right? It's your duty, you're supposed to do it, you don't know it's your duty, but somehow or another you did it. But all you've done is the mechanics of doing it, so that's the niti. You got that from it. Or you might get the argument, but you don't get the Dharma from it.
So what if we, like, generally know that following the Vedas is correct, but we don't know specifically that at this particular point we're actually following, I mean...
Because the point is, as you serve Krishna, then you don't have to worry about it. Yeah. Huh? Actually, there's no Dharma other than Vaishnava Dharma. All other religions propagated in the world, including those to be propagated in future years. Because it may be, well, these ones aren't, but what about, you know, like that. Yeah. Factually comprise different steps upon the ascension to Vaishnava Dharma, or alternatively, they are deviations from the essential Vaishnava Dharma. When another religion complements Vaishnava Dharma, the devotee should respect that religion in accordance with its degree of purity. Right, so those aspects that are nice, you respect that. Those aspects that are not nice. Thus, the followers of those religions, which actually constitute different stages on the path to pure Vaishnava Dharma, must be accorded proper appreciation and respect. Right? In other words, the positive elements, in other words, the element that the glass is half full, that you respect. The glass is half full. You can't say there's nothing in the glass. And on the other hand, whilst dealing with groups that have deviated from pure Vaishnava Dharma, one must never bear malice, but engage oneself in the culture of one's own devotional truth. In other words, you just avoid it.
Yes.
Right? You know, that's indifference. It's not that you speak badly against. You appreciate the one, but you're just neutral. In other words, there's appreciation and neutral.
Yes.
Does that make sense? One must never bear malice, but engage oneself in the culture of one's own devotional truth. Thus, devotees should never be hateful and show intolerance towards other religious practices. When the auspicious moment comes in a person's life, he will easily embrace pure Vaishnava Dharma. Of this there is no doubt. Footnote 18. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.26, highly qualified Brahmins situated in the mode of goodness have no grudges against the mode of worship of others. They have all respect for other demigods, even though they may look ghastly, like Kala Bhairava or Mahakali. They know very well that those horrible features of the Supreme Lord are all different servitors of the Lord under different conditions. Yet they reject the worship of both horrible and attractive features of the demigods. They concentrate only on the forms of Vishnu, because they are serious about liberation from the material conditions. Right? Because if you're engaged with it, then how you'll get free from it. Right? In other words, when we can say, no, but we're engaging, Yukta Vairag, you're engaging. No, you're engaging in the Lord's service. Right? We're not engaged in something else. Material energy being applied not in Krishna's service does not give liberation. Right? Like that. It's because it's connected to Krishna. That's what is the favorable aspect. It's not itself. It's material energy. It's nice material energy, not nice material energy, but it's all material energy. The demigods, even to the stage of Brahma, the supreme of all the demigods, cannot offer liberation to anyone. Hiranyakashipu underwent a severe type of penance to become eternal in life, but his worshipable deity, Brahma, could not satisfy him with such blessings. Therefore, Vishnu and none else is called Muktipada, or the personality of Godhead, who can bestow upon us mukti, liberation. The demigods, being like other living entities in the material world, are all liquidated at the time of the annihilation of the material structure. They are themselves unable to get liberation, and what to speak of giving liberation to their devotees. The demigods can award the worshippers some temporary benefit only, and not the ultimate one. And so temporary, they can give some material benefit, but they can't give spiritual. It's not in their power. They can't do it. Sri Nityananda Das Babaji. Is it necessary to actively propagate Vaishnava Dharma? Like, do you preach? Sri Hari Das Babaji, indeed, by all means, it is the duty of everyone to do so. Our beloved Lord Sriman Mahaprabhu has entrusted everybody with the responsibility to preach. Right? So it's Mahaprabhu has done that. Okay. Footnote 19. Jare deka tare kaha Krishna upadesh. Amara agyai guru hoy tara edesh. Instruct everyone to follow the orders of Lord Sri Krishna as they are given in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. In this way, become a spiritual master and try to liberate everyone in this land. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 7.128. So here we see Lord Chaitanya means this idea. Prabhupada says all his disciples should be spiritual masters. So it's in line with this order of Lord Chaitanya, is that in this way become a spiritual master. But what is this way of becoming a spiritual master? What is the aspect of spiritual master being described here?
Preaching.
Preaching, instructing. So siksha, that's the main thing. The Adi Guru is the main siksha guru, right? Sadguru is the siksha guru. The preachers are siksha guru. So it's siksha that's main, right? And because of panchratric formality, then there's the diksha guru. But even that is supposed to be based on siksha. So siksha is the primary element. So everyone becomes guru by preaching. Like that. However, one should remember that an unworthy candidate must first be made qualified before one instructs him in the glories of Krishna Nam. Right? So, lots of halava.
I heard you had a love for Govardhan Puja.
I think they may. In certain situations, for instance, in speaking to inimical persons, upeksha is required, and so one should not speak anything that would spark off bitter controversy and thus cause impediments in the preaching work. The nectarian words of Sri Haridas Babaji had a wonderful effect upon Sri Nityananda Das Babaji. He was overcome with prema and began to roll upon the ground. The assembled Vaishnavas broke out into loud chanting of Krishna Nam, and they all paid prostrated obeisances to Sri Haridas Babaji. Thereafter, the meeting in that secluded grove broke up, and everyone gradually went away to their individual dwellings. Okay. Yes.
Can we say that Nityananda Das Babaji, with the association of Haridas Babaji, is becoming a Uttama Adhikari?
That is not so important to bring that out. It just means that now he understands all the different elements.
Because you said he is overcome with prema.
Yeah, but we mentioned is that the Madhyama worships Krishna with prema. It's just the volume of prema.
Yes.
It means if you're doing something with affection, that's prema. But you don't call it prema until that's all there is.
Yes.
You know, I'm saying the stage of prema, but it's being done with prema. Right? Prem Sekh, Hosri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. With prema, call out the names of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, like this. So it means that with affection. So when that affection is total, then that's called prema. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. And then there's stages beyond that. Prema is in the second position. There's another eight. Yes.
Maharaj has mentioned about this not speak, and I think that is part of a bitter controversy.
Yes.
And we see also in the example of Prabhupada, sometimes he makes people sometimes angry.
Yeah, but did it resolve nicely?
Sometimes not.
Sometimes not? I mean, what is that example of not?
When he met, I think this professor of Hinduism, and his name is, I think, Patel. It was in Philadelphia. Ravindra Sarup invited that professor.
But he's an Indian.
Yeah, he was an Indian. He was Indian, professor.
Yeah, so Indians aren't supposed to be doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
Indians aren't supposed to be in Philadelphia being Westerners. They're supposed to be over there preaching.
But the point is, Prabhupada irritated him, let's say.
But that's on the social platform. He's an Indian. He's not acting as one. He's acting in a low-class way. Probably if you check, it's not that it was on a philosophical point. It's on a social point.
Yeah.
So on the social thing, you can interact. And so, if he, you know, Prabhupada's a sannyasa, he's a grihastha, and so, you know, he's not acting properly. Indian to Indian. You have to be able to understand. It means, what is the point being made there? Is that you don't discuss the spiritual topic matters. For instance, one should not speak anything to spark off. So the point is it's qualified before you instruct him in the glories of Krishna Nam. So you don't say anything in the glories of Krishna Nam that will spark a bitter controversy. But you tell him he's a rat bag because he's an Indian and he's not supposed to be doing this. This is for the Westerners. That's just normal. No?
He asked him if he can tell him the definition of Hinduism. The professor requested Prabhupada, and he was teacher of Hinduism. Prabhupada, you are asking me to give you definition, you are teacher of Hinduism.
Yeah, but so what's that? That's social. You're a teacher, it's the social duties. You're a teacher, and you're asking me what the definition is? Right? It means if you don't know the definition, how are you a teacher? Right? The point is knowing the definition, then you're supposed to carry it forward and show the importance, how to apply it, all these different things. But if you don't know what it is, let's say I am, you know, the authority on, you know, automobiles in the world, right? I am the PhD, right? And so that qualifies me. So, but I don't know what an automobile is. So, what am I supposed to say? Are you an idiot or what? You know what I'm saying? Because we're looking at it here simply, oh, he upset him. But you have to know what upset is and what's the position. Because what you're saying there, it was purely social. It wasn't describing some glories of Krishna and he got upset. It didn't even get to there. It hasn't even got past the things you claim to be a teacher. You're a professor. Now, in America, if you're a professor, what does that mean? You're just one of the schmoes? You're just a PhD. No, it means you're a PhD. You've gone through a whole thing. He's probably got 10 years. He's a senior guy. If they wanted to kick him out, they can't. Right? And so now he's a professor. It takes a long time to get to that. It's very rare to get to that position. So he's very proud of that position. So you have your topmost academic position that you can attain in America, and the guy doesn't even know the definition of his own topic. So then why Prabhupada won't say something? You know, and he's thinking he's being very spiritual by, oh, what is the, you know, and this and very... But, you know, the way they ask and all that, they're not asking. What they're doing is throwing it out for you, and then after you said your thing, then they'll tell you what the actual thing is. It's just a social game of false ego. So Prabhupada's just not playing the game. And so we should not use this against Prabhupada. If we do, you're a demon. You understand? So, do me a favor. Don't bring these things up again like that. Because you can't find another. Where's another one? You know what I'm saying? Where's another example? So many things, all these people that he dealt with so nicely that he was able to bring out things. Why would you bring up this one? And especially you don't know so much the detail. It's a social thing. Be able to tell the difference between what's social and what's spiritual. Important, especially once we've just gone through that for the, you know, this is what we're discussing. In other words, be very careful about playing around with Prabhupada didn't follow this item that was mentioned here by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It's very dangerous ground. Very dangerous ground. And whoever plays with it, it's dangerous for them. You don't play with these things. You see, how did Prabhupada deal with this? What is his position? He's an elder Indian gentleman. He's a scholar. Right? He's a sannyasi. Right? He knows what's proper. And this other one is playing around as a Western academic and thinking that he's special. So it's between two Indians. Does that make sense? So therefore, don't use this like this. Use this in your position, that when you go out and preach, that you don't say something foolish that starts an argument. You know what I'm saying? Like that. I really find it annoying that people find it so easy to find fault in what Prabhupada does. Does that make sense?
That wasn't my intention.
It's not your intention, but it's what you did. That's what I'm saying. It's not your intention, but how is it so easily we brought it up? There's thousands of examples of our preaching that we could bring up. You know, you've been out on the street and preaching and probably started so many arguments. Why didn't you bring up one of those? Why would you bring up Prabhupada's? Because if Prabhupada can do it, that means you can do it. You know what I'm saying? Or it's being brought as the politically correct, so therefore we can't preach like Prabhupada did. We have to do it a different way because the Shastra says. You know what I'm saying? It goes into all kinds of strange things. Does that make sense?
Isn't it also that this professor actually admitted that Prabhupada was right, like 20 years later?
I'm not sure. That's the point is that you start from there, yeah. Is that it worked out, so Prabhupada knows what he's doing. That's why I asked the first thing I asked, how did it work out?
Yeah, exactly.
Because so many times it starts out something, but Prabhupada knows what he's doing, and then the guy surrenders, because you know the person, you know how they'll react. Yeah. Like Dr. Patel in Bombay, you go on the morning walks, they just argue like anything. Like that. He would play such a heavy, you know, atheistic role, and Prabhupada would smash him and this and that. But they had such a nice relationship. Because Indians do that. They love to... If I have a doubt, then I don't present it that I have a doubt. Because that would, you know, the ego wouldn't allow that. So I present it as, no, this is what it is. And so they argue it like anything. And then when you finish, I've had that sometimes. It means you do it when you have time. So they have a morning walk and that. You know, it's a time like that. But one of the best things is you're on the train, right? You got 24 hours. They got all the time in the world, right? So you're sitting there, and they go off for hours going through it, and they come in with this, that, and smashing everything. And then at the end, then they go, oh, yes, very nice. And then they start quoting Gita, this and that, and all these things, and that they're all nice. You know? And so all it is somebody said that to them, and they didn't know what to say. So instead of just saying, you know, I was talking with this guy, and I said this, and then he said that, and I didn't know what to say. What should you say? They won't do that. Right? They'll go, no, but in the Gita, this and that, so therefore, you know, and that, and then you argue. But then all it was is that's what they want. They wanted to be. So there's also these elements that there are there. So Prabhupada knows who he's dealing with because it always works out. That's why I was saying something that didn't work out, I've never heard of it. You know?
There's another story where he smashes a Mayavadi, and in the end he's like just smashing him, and he's like crying and touching Prabhupada's feet. Oh, sorry, I'm such a demon,
yes.
And Prabhupada, he just walks away while he's lying there crying. And then after a long time, he dares to kind of look up, and Prabhupada's just gone. and he looks for a moment, and then, Jai, and then he walks off like all in ecstasy.
He knows how to do it.
Yeah.
So the point is that Prabhupada could do so many things also, because his age, like I think he was in Australia, and there was something, and he was talking to somebody, I don't know if he was a college student or somebody like that. He's sitting there, and the other person's sitting on the other side of the desk. He tells them something. I forget what it was, but something about the nature of the soul or something. And he doesn't get it. And he tells him again, and doesn't get it. And again, and he keeps arguing this and comes up with these things. So Prabhupada leans across the table, grabs him by the drags him across the table till he's like this far away, then says it again really slowly, and then lets go. And then it's like, oh, okay. And then after it was over, then Guru Kripa, you know, he was thinking, wow, hey, that's great. Can we do that? You know, is that? Prabhupada says, no. There's certain things he says a child can say anything, an old man can do anything like that. So he says, you're not old enough. You can't do that.
I think it was the difference between cotton ball and cotton shirt. He had some eye.
Okay.
Cotton ball, cotton shirt.
It doesn't.
Is there a difference?
Okay. But so the point is that there's certain things because you're dealing on there's techniques and social. So here it's a technique. So you have to be discerned between what is facts about Krishna and what is techniques of discussion. Or what is situations, or what is social elements? That's the whole thing, is to be able to see all the differences. That's the point of analyzation. You see the subtleties like that. Does that make sense? Okay. So then, in the evening, we'll start chapter 9.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Srila Prabhupada ki
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki
Jai
Chaitanya Gaura Prema.